We are so often dazzled by the creativity of other people, we neglect attention to our own creative gifts. Today's guest insists we all have those gifts. Tom Sturgis worked in the music industry, so he's watched a lot of creative people roll out their stuff, and he includes plenty of examples in his book, Every Idea is a Good Idea. Tom Sturgis spent more than 2 decades in the music business as an executive. His duties included signing artists to contracts. He teaches courses on the music business at UCLA and is the author of 2 books on raising children. So he's been tapping his own creativity. Tom Sturgis, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. I appreciate you guys making time for me this morning.
No problem. One of your duties at the record industry was song plugger. What's that?
The song plugger is a person who is as important as a midwife during a pregnancy. For a couple of seconds, you really matter, and everybody forgets you. So the song plugger takes an unrecorded song and gives it to an artist who is looking for a hit. That's the job that I did for many, many years, ended up having a lot of hits. My other principal job was as a talent discoverer, looking for people who had talent and didn't know quite what to do with it or didn't know if they had it. And the only evidence I had was them and their songs.
And so where would you tend to find talent? And I'm thinking this is back a few years.
It would come in anywhere. You could get it at a live concert. You could hear it over the radio. You could walk into a nightclub and hear somebody. For instance, and this is one of the rules I believe, is that when somebody's performing, and even though it's only 10 people in the club, I might be one of the 10. So perform and give it everything you have, no matter what. And that will provide the world the best chance to hear your best music.
All right. I'm not trying to be rude with this question, but do you have to have any musical talent yourself to be an executive in the business?
I happen to have a modicum of talent, and that put me way ahead of most people. And I always had a piano in my office, and one of my parlor tricks, one of the things I can do is I can teach anybody in the world how to play the piano in 2 minutes so that you can play for the rest of your life.
Oh, I wish you were here. I'd like to see this.
Anybody. But it was discovered by Irving Berlin. I can't take credit for it. All the black keys are in the same key. Do, re, mi, sol, la. And those 5 notes never conflict with one another, even if you play them all at the same time.
Huh. That's really interesting.
There they are.
Oh, wow. That's great. You do have the piano right there.
So you can have handfuls of chords and play like you really know what you're doing. And as long as you stay in the black keys, nobody will know.
Huh. I'm usually the opposite. I stick with the white keys myself. I find myself safer there. But you're right. You can get some odd sounding chords that way. Tom, the idea of using up creativity is mentioned in your book. Is that a theory you ascribe to?
2 geniuses had opposing views of this. Maya Angelou said you can't use up your creativity because the more you use, the more you have. And I agree with that. At the same time, Paul Simon said that you have a reservoir of talent and that once you use it up, you're done. And he fought this by reinventing himself in several different occasions, the most famous obviously being Graceland, where he surrounded himself with musicians from another culture who played their instruments differently and sometimes upside down, and he stuck himself in the middle of their musical world and used that as his inspiration to help create that album. At the same time, a song of his called American Tune, a really, really beautiful song, is the melody of that is a Lutheran chorale from the 1600s that he just lifted and put into his song. So he will look almost anywhere for inspiration and reinvention.
But in fact, the example you just gave, I mean, creativity is also about knowing what are the good things to lift from other people.
This is a quote from Picasso. He said, good artists borrow, great artists steal. And it's quite true. And I believe it's true. I mean, there is one of the examples I give in the book is a discovery that was made in his workshop in Mougins, France, that behind the third door, like way deep in the back, was a locked combination lock door that he kept in there the works of the great masters that he had acquired. And with it were his worksheets, and you could see he was taking his brushes and trying to match exactly what Rembrandt had done in a painting and what Gauguin had done in a painting. So he was not afraid to borrow liberally from the genius of those who came before him.
Tom, the idea of teaching creativity, though, when, you know, most of us are not Picasso, how do you deal with people who just simply say, I'm not creative?
It's not possible that you're not creative. Creativity is part of our genetic endowment. The reason we're at the top of the food chain is because for thousands of generations, we have been the most creative being on the planet. And I'll give you an example. Everything that you see right now, everything that your eye looks at one time was just an idea to somebody. A microphone, a pane of glass, a chair, a desk, a pencil. These things were nothing. They were just somebody going, God, that would be a lot easier if I did blank.
All right, so necessity is the mother of invention, but obviously creativity goes along with that as well. Tom Sturgis, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a former music industry executive. His book is Every Idea is a Good Idea. We'll come back and talk more with Tom and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us on the Jefferson Exchange. When we come back on the way to this break, let me remind you once again, it is fall fund drive time here on Jefferson Public Radio. Our listeners are also our supporters financially. Please make your pledge of support to 888-552-6191 or make that pledge online at ijpr.org. Back with Tom Sturgis and you in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is former music industry executive Tom Sturgis. He teaches creativity and about the music industry, and he's written a book called Every Idea is a Good Idea, How Songwriters and Other Working Artists Get It Done. Second subtitle is Be Creative Anytime, Anywhere. Don't just think other people are creative because we've all got it in us, Tom says. Join us on the exchange to discuss this. 800-838-3760. That's our number for the entire region. 800-838-3760. Or email us at jx@jeffnet.org. Here again, in the process of teaching creativity, or trying to encourage people to use what the creativity they have, you always end up with comparisons, I would bet. And how do you stop the, well, yeah, this is mine, but it's not as good as somebody else's?
Television producer James Brooks, who I interviewed for the book, this, if I can just do this little inlet, I did a study of group creativity as well and chose the television writer's room as what to me was the most difficult place to be creative. So I interviewed Mr. Brooks, and his comment about creativity was a poem. And he said, if anybody was starting out and trying to be creative, I would tell them this poem, which is, try again, fail again, fail again, fail better. And that's how I worked. I did a lot of work with inner city children, and that's basically how this book came to be. I was doing volunteer work. I was working for Shaquille O'Neal at the time, and I was going to inner city schools and trying to reach kids, and I ended up telling them lots of stories about people who I had run into or who were legends and how those people achieved their creativity, thus giving them the head start to these students, the head start to achieve their own creativity. Simple things. Paul McCartney writes an X down if he can't find the word that he needs exactly at that moment and finishes the idea and then goes back and gets the X. Simple, tiny little thing. Carol King, unafraid to ask what people think of her work and to listen for the answer. Simple, not a challenging, difficult thing to put into your creative process. And that's what I taught them, the techniques and the protocols of geniuses who had already achieved their great success.
Well, and back to the Paul McCartney example, there's a great little vignette in here that I had heard before and forgotten about. Scrambled Eggs. Paul McCartney, perhaps his most famous song.
Perhaps the most famous song, but when the melody came to him, he held on to that melody by giving it a couple of words that would just trigger trigger the thought when he needed to come to it, because the lyric hadn't arrived yet. They didn't arrive at the same time. So scrambled eggs, da 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 ba ba, scrambled eggs, da da ba da da, scrambled eggs, which of course became Yesterday, the most performed and recorded song in the history of the music business. The point being, he didn't beat himself up to get a word that was right at that moment. He let it sit. He let it resonate with him. He let it just hang. And then when the proper words came, he knew them.
He gave it a placeholder.
That's what I called it, Paul McCartney's placeholder. And I think that's a key technique. Just look at your job, sir. I mean, you have a very, very creative job. You have to have a conversation with 30 people a week, brand new, with new questions and new ideas and new insights that you're trying to gain on behalf of your listeners. A very, very creative thing to do.
And fun, too, I have to admit. Our guest is Tom Sturgis. His book is Every Idea is a Good Idea, about encouraging creativity. Tom, we were just talking about Paul McCartney and some of the other names that you brought up. And then there's a section here about Diane Warren's work habits, which I find really interesting. I've often wondered about, when people make the big time, do they just leave all their old stuff behind? And the answer for her was no.
No. Diane, and I've known Diane probably since her second week in the music business, going back to Laura Branigan and the other people who were in her life at that time. And she had this tiny little office on Sunset Boulevard right across from the CNN building. And it was a rat hole. And on the walls, she would write down the songs that were her covers for that year. And pretty soon these got to be on whiteboards and bigger and bigger. She ended up taking the whole floor of this large office building in Los Angeles. And that's got her publishing company and recording studios and all her businesses, but she still writes in the same little room that she's been writing in for the last 30 years.
Why does she say, though? What does it do for her being in that environment?
My belief is that it's her superstition, that room has been great to her. That's the room that's inspired her. She gets there. She's been in that room every morning at 8:30, except for Sundays, every morning at 8:30 for 30-plus years. And the smell of the plaster that's crumbling around the windows and the tattered drapes, I mean, you would think a pauper was living in this space. But no, it's one of the great songwriters of all time.
But then by contrast, and just to point out that the methods are as different as the people and what they produce creatively, there's Allie Willis, who does not confine herself physically like Diane Warren, or in many other ways, for that matter.
Allie Willis, a genius, brilliant woman, wrote the theme song to Friends, wrote September with Earth, Wind, and Fire, wrote The Color Purple. She wants nothing in her life that is not creative. She doesn't have a checkbook. She doesn't pay any bills. She is all creative all the time in her big pink house way out in the valley. She also, if I can add, said a brilliant thing to me. She said, the path to self-respect goes through creativity. And I use this as my mantra dealing with the inner city children, is that I'm teaching you how to create, but what I'm actually teaching you is self-respect.
How difficult a concept is that to communicate to the inner city kids?
None of them want to be there. Believe me, they watch TV, they see the nice clothes, they see the nice cars, they see the nice houses, they want out. And I've worked with well over 1,000 of these kids, personally mentored 88 and 89 graduated from high school in June. They know that it's tough to get out, and they know the only way to get out is to work harder than the next guy. And their creative practices, what we would do is write songs together and go out all over the city and perform the songs they had written. So they were rewarded for their own creativity on a regular basis. Imagine dad is mowing lawns, mom is cleaning houses, and they're getting a standing ovation from captains of industry for the words and music that they created.
But I'm going to guess that in some of the early sessions, probably the first one, somebody, and they might not be particularly polite when they ask it, is, what is creativity?
Well, it's got a thousand definitions. Everybody's got their own idea of it. You know, it's sort of like, how long is a piece of string? But I did ask at the Fauché Learning Center, where I did a lot of that work, I asked this little boy. There was a group of kids, and a little boy put his hand up in the back of the room. I quote him in the book. He said, creativity is what makes you you. It's a beautiful, beautiful line. And I've never forgotten it. That is the individual stamp of your creativity, is it is what makes you you, different from anyone else.
That's really profound. It's especially when you stop and try to think about how it applies.
Well, it's also this lends credence to the idea that everybody has creativity in them. And whether you are a songwriter, a dress designer, an architect, a trial lawyer, a school teacher, a radio announcer, the brain is humming along doing the same thing. Your brain does not know what you're thinking. Okay? Your brain is operating as designed and as gifted to you. Synapses are connecting neurons, and there's actually a spray, an enticing, excitatory spray that the brain provides that helps more neurons and more synapses connect. And that's all that thinking is. All of us have it. All of us have copious, to use your word, amounts of it. And if we could just get out of our own way, the number one enemy of creativity is self-doubt. And the person who sits down to create and says, oh, I can't do this, wrong. Start, try again, fail again, fail again, fail better. Write the one sentence the next day and two sentences the day after. And in the book, I actually provide exercises, simple, easy, fun ways to get your brain thinking more creatively at any time that you need to.
Tom Sturgis, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, former music industry executive, has known lots of performers, artists, writers over the years. His book is Every Idea is a Good Idea. Examples abound, and so do some exercises as well. As you heard, you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about creativity at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. And email, you can send us an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Okay, the exercise is five of these. The first one is called the Excellent Question Game.
I'd love this. If you wanted to play right now, I'd do it with you.
Okay.
All you have to do is ask a question you don't know the answer to. That's it. Because, first of all, questions are a form of creativity, probably its most basic. And any thought you've never had before is, to me, the first building block of creativity. So let's do, you and I, let's do bees. By the way, there are no answers in this game, just
questions. Just
questions, okay. So go ahead, a question you don't know the answer to about bees.
How long do bees live?
Great question. Do bees have emotions?
Where does honey come from?
Excellent. How long is the farthest flight a bee can take in a day?
How many calories do bees expend in flying?
Beautiful. And so on and so on. And by the, 10 minutes into our conversation, our brains they're lubed up. They're ready to go. They're ready to think about whatever it is. And that's just one little exercise that you can do.
It is fun to get into those exercises when you think about it, because there's actually a moment when you have to go blank and you have to fire up some neurons to make it all work.
Absolutely correct.
So this is what you're just talking about with the structures of the brain. This is what you call the creativity district, I see.
Yes, I did that was my vamp as I wrote, and I'm imagining that somewhere in the brain there are thousands of thousand-story buildings, and that's where all the creativity takes place. And it was just my way of trying to understand the amazing gift that is the human brain, an amazing, amazing gift. If you think about all the things that it's been capable of creating in all man since the beginning, since we started being man, and how it's changed our lives. You can take one brain, a brain like Steve Jobs. I mean, he never said no, right? He never said no idea was a bad idea to him. He's the guy who said, hey, you know what? A phone can be a camera. It can be a credit card. It can be anything. You think about that, and that's sort of the breadth of creativity that we, all of us, have if we can just take advantage of it and let it happen.
And sometimes it is about coming up with the ideas that other people can shape a little more. And as you point out, creativity does not require expertise. Steve Jobs didn't have to be an industrial designer to make the iPhone work, but he needed to know people who were.
Exactly. And that's the key to running a business successfully, is to surround yourself with people who know more than you do and tap into the breadth of their knowledge. I use as an example in the book the fact that Beethoven could not play the violin, which is extraordinary when you think about it. This is a man who changed the way the world looked at the violin, wrote almost every piece of music he created had a violin in it, yet he had to bring a violinist over to his house and ask him if he could play what had just been written, because he didn't know, he wasn't sure it even could the instrument could make those noises.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And by the way, I don't think a lot of screenwriters are great actors. I don't think the dress designers would look good in their little black dress. Frank Lloyd Wright never actually built anything. He was not a builder. He was a designer of buildings. So, yes, you're absolutely right. I agree 100%. You don't have to have expertise in a field to be creative. Songwriters, you ever heard some of them sing when, I mean, they're not great. They're not great.
Well, Burt Bacharach is the example you give of that in the book.
Or I can hear it rolling on my head. He's got nothing left. I'm sorry. I love the guy. He's one of the greatest creators of this of the last century. But his voice is a raspy mess. Sorry.
Tom Sturgis is our guest on The Exchange. His book is Every Idea is a Good Idea. It's about encouraging creativity, which we do all have, he says. You do say that creativity is destructive. To what or to whom, Tom?
Creativity is destructive? Oh, yes, absolutely. It is a destructive force. It interrupts the usual patterns of people who are not getting out of the way of progress. Progress is a destructive thing to that which came before it, obviously. You think about how the internet has changed everything about our life, everything about every life, how we shop, how we communicate, how we look for information. It's changed everything. And it's, I don't say destructive, I say disruptive. That's what caught me off guard. I'm sorry.
It is,
to me, it is a very disruptive force in the same way that the automobile destroyed the buggy whip business, which was going very strong at the turn of the last century, in the same way that television ruined, quote-unquote, the radio business, right? But did it really? And did cell phones? I mean, how many people even have landlines anymore? I mean, cell phones ended the... How about a payphone? That used to be big business, having all those operators sitting around, please deposit another 50 cents. But creativity, one person having an idea, has disrupted all those businesses.
Is creativity fundamentally the same, is the encouraging, I guess, of creativity fundamentally the same process? And I ask this because I think about the changes in the music industry, which you spent so much time in. And when I think about people like Alan and Marilyn Bergman, for example, sitting down and working on their songs, probably around a piano, versus going into the studio these days and turning on the drum machine and the backing tracks and just trying to do some riffs over it until words come.
It's whatever works for you. Alan and Marilyn Bergman, 4 Academy Awards, 52 songs recorded by Barbara Streisand, a work ethic that's not to be believed. That's one way of approaching creativity, and they describe it as pitching and catching ideas. And they're back and forth and back and forth, and that's just how they do it. Somebody who I also wrote about, Dr. Dre, does a fascinating thing. He brings 3 or 4 players into the studio with him, outfits everybody with drum machines, sound machines, rhythm machines, everything, and then creates beat after beat after beat, while Eminem is sitting in the next room waiting to hear what they're going to come up with for him. Both are incredibly creative. Both are very, very different, but they both tap into that same central piece of new. I want a new idea. I want something nobody's ever heard before. I quote a guy named Dennis Morgan, a tremendous lyricist from Nashville. And the key to his creativity is to say it without saying it. Isn't that beautiful? To say it without saying it. So he doesn't say, I love you. He says, I wouldn't have missed it for the world. It's a different, and that's what inspires his creativity. It's just a slightly different twist on an old idea.
Tell us about his process, because you detail how busy Dennis Morgan keeps himself and has over the years.
Oh, Dennis is amazing, amazing songwriter. He's been Songwriter of the Year several times. And he and Lamont Dozier share a technique. And I wrote about Lamont Dozier, the most successful songwriter in the history of the music business, with more number one records than anybody else. He was the heart and soul of the Motown hit-making machine. Oh, there goes the piano. Lamont listens to the universe. He will listen for a catch or a phrase or a melody when he's in a restaurant or in a movie theater or anywhere, just for something that'll inspire him to get up and create one more time.
Much more about creativity and creators, and that includes us, too, with Tom Sturgis. His book is Every Idea is a Good Idea. You can join us on The Exchange when we come back. On the way to the break, let me remind you, it is fall fun to drive time. Please call in your pledge of support to keep JPR on the air today and every day. 888-552-6191 or pledge online at ijpr.org. And thank you. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Tom Sturgis, who spent quite a while, 2.5 decades, in the music business as an executive, signing artists and discovering artists. And he found a lot about creativity there. Creativity information he shares with us in his book, Every Idea is a Good Idea, not just about the creative processes of people who've been really good at it, but also how we can encourage the creative process in ourselves. You can join this discussion on The Exchange. Phone number here, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. We were just talking about some of the examples. Dr. Dre, for example, of the process he goes through. And then there are people like Babyface, who does not write down anything. He wants to let things simmer until they've matured, I guess, or ripened, or gotten further cooked in his brain. But for every Babyface who doesn't write things down, did you also find people who scribble notes constantly and keep reams of things in their pockets?
Absolutely. And I think the Babyface technique is that he does, if he doesn't remember it in the morning, he figures nobody else will. So that if he's working on a song that he thinks is going to be a hit song and he wakes up in the morning and can't hum the melody back that he was working on the day before, that's a factor in the process, and he might just as well let that song go completely.
Wow. That's...
Other people do write everything down, and I encourage, as a matter of fact, I asked the publisher of my book to make the margins really wide so that you could write ideas down, so that if you're inspired to do something or have a thought that you immediately have, that there's plenty of room to write it down in the book.
Another example, you talked about Carole King earlier, her old songwriting partner and life partner, Jerry Goffin. He sounds rather annoying to work with. What does he do?
He had an amazing process, and I've told, I mean, probably every songwriter I've ever worked with or signed about this thing that Jerry does. What Jerry would do is almost meditate, right, because he only wrote the lyrics. Only wrote the lyrics, never came up with the melodies, at least during the time that I knew him. I don't know about earlier in his life. So he would just say to the composer, play it again, play it again, play it again. And this could go on for 45 minutes without any other interaction between them. And then like a sleeping giant waking up from out of underneath an avalanche, he would go, and grab a pen and grab a paper and write the whole lyric, top to bottom, the intro, the vamp, the chorus, the bridge, the B section, everything would be on these two pieces of paper, three, whatever it took. And then he would sit back, exhausted, and, you know, try again a few days later. And by the way, these were brilliant lyrics. And it was almost like he was catching his creativity off guard. Like, he let it sit, let it simmer, and then, boom, explode with a creative burst.
He had to pounce on it.
Yes, exactly. He had to, and this is something Neil Young said, which I never understood, but I put it in the book anyway. He said that he approaches a new song like he's walking up on a wild animal in a cage.
Because he does have to approach it that way.
I guess. Yeah. I never got the explanation. You know, something happened, and you know, I just didn't get the rest of it. But that's what that statement was. He walks up on a song like he's approaching a new animal in a cage.
So, Tom, honestly, was there anybody whose process you just looked at and thought, Boy, this is weird.
Well, there were people who, I mean, and very, very famous, well-respected people I'm not going to mention, who had no idea what happened when they created. They just were, and hit songwriters, that they just didn't have a clue as to what happened. They were like, I don't know, I just write. And I didn't use any of them. I couldn't really make sense of that because my book is an instructional. My book is a, hey, here's what I've learned, and I'm sharing it with everybody, and a guy who doesn't know can't really do much with him.
Huh. And it sounds like if it's working for them, they don't particularly endeavor to really know their process.
It's a key. If you notice, most interviews with creators, songwriters, whomever, there's almost no conversation about the creative process. Right? And that's because most of these guys know not to mess with it. Think of all the interviews Paul McCartney and John Lennon have done, and I've looked at all of them, I believe. Now, one time do they talk about how they wrote. So the what I got from George Martin that I put in the book is how the early Beatles wrote, which to me is one of the keys to collaborating. I don't know if you remember this part. Sir George Martin was in Los Angeles to give a lecture on the making of Sgt. Pepper's, and he was working with me. I was running a fundraiser for him, and I turned every conversation to the Beatles. What were they like? What did they do? And he says to me, the early Beatles made two agreements. Paul and John made two agreements. One, that every song would have both their names on it, John Lennon and Paul McCartney, regardless of who wrote what. So Eleanor Rigby, entirely Paul. You're Gonna Lose That Girl, entirely John, and so forth. But they made a second agreement, and that was this, that they would never criticize each other's work. They would just write the next section better. Now, can you imagine sitting down to collaborate with somebody on a new project, on a screenplay, on your budget for the next year, or whatever it is that's going to require your creativity, and you say, hey, let's follow the early Beatles rules. We won't criticize each other. We'll just make the next idea that much better. Hmm. The freedom that would give you to have any idea and throw it out there, fail, try again, fail again, fail again, fail better, without that person sitting there giving you a sour look, going, nah, I don't think that one's going to work. Suppose they said nothing and they had to just come up with something better. A brilliant step from my standpoint.
Well, you know, talking about the early Beatles reminds me that we had the recent interview about the biography by Paul Trinka about Brian Jones in the early days of the Rolling Stones. He didn't get a writing credit on anything, but he certainly was instrumental in a real literal sense in pulling together the early songs of Mick Jagger and Keith Richards.
It was his band. He was the originator. He pulled everybody in, and it turned out that these guys could write a lot better than he could. He was also using a lot more drugs than everybody else, and you know, he was experimenting heavily. And I think Mick, who came from an economics background, I think you know, he was a math major, and you know, it shows in the amount of money he's been able to create. He and Keith were the songwriters, but you know, not Brian. Brian was out of it.
All right, so when we talk about the people who were the songwriters, though, when any of these people handled dry periods, you already talked about Paul Simon reinventing himself, thinking his reservoir was tapped out.
Mm-hmm.
What do some of the other people do when they end up in dry periods? Their just stuff isn't coming, I mean, through whatever process they use or are not even aware of their use.
The people that I found who, I mean, I'll give you an example, a guy named Billy Corgan, who I signed and was the lead writer, producer, singer of Smashing Pumpkins. He kept his head down and just wrote more, just kept on creating, dry period or no dry period, just kept on creating, exercising the muscle, almost like an Olympic swimmer in between Olympics. You know, you still swim, you still got to stay with it, but if you don't keep the muscle exercised, it's not really going to work for you. The other thing I found out is there are simple things that you can do to get started to avoid writer's block. And I got a quote from Jeff Baxter, who had been the lead guitar player for both Steely Dan and the Doobie Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about getting a session started by putting on a Motown record and just playing along with it. and letting him pick up the groove and play with the band, and he would start the record over and start it over and start it over and just kept at it and just kept at it. The best way I've found to put an end to writer's block, here it is. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Find the book that you love, the book that you, your favorite book. Open to a random page. Run your finger all over that page and stop somewhere. That sentence is the opening sentence of whatever you're working on. Whatever it is, and you force your creativity. It's like, remember when cars had clutches and you had to run them down the hill and pop the clutch to get it started?
Yep.
Okay, it's almost like that. You take one line. Maya Angelou is full of these. Sam Shepard has great works like these. And then you just use that line and force yourself to create using that as the first line.
Huh.
Number two, most important, you never delete. You never delete what you've written. You never cross it out. Suppose all you got that day was one line, and you don't love it anymore, put a soft line through it. Or if you're going to delete it from the document you're working on your computer, just gather it at the bottom. Because then you've got a little trove of ideas that you can go back to that might not have been perfect when you thought of them, but the next day, man, do they make a lot more sense.
We have a couple of emails here. Jay from Walk, I don't know what that means. He says, we would have clients who came in with storyboards and or concepts. They would ask, can you do that? And we would say, probably. Need to do some tests, though. Though sometimes we did not initially have a clue. Sometimes, like the kid at Home Alone, panic. And then he says, I used to keep a notepad and Sharpie next to the bed, so when the answer came at 4 in the morning while sleeping, I could take note of it. That's
brilliant.
Absolutely.
You never know when your idea is going to pop. When the brain, by the way, the brain also doesn't know when you're sleeping. It doesn't. It's just this machine. It's like a diesel motor outside a movie shoot, just humming along, creating power all the time, all the time. And a lot of creators who I worked with and who I read about, they actually came up with their ideas when they were distracted.
When
they were distracted. I interviewed Alan Greenspan at the Aspen Ideas Festival. This is the guy who ran the world's economy for, 30 years? And I said to him, are you a creative guy? And he goes, oh, absolutely. And I looked at him, I was like, really? He goes, yeah, I was a jazz clarinetist for Artie Shaw for 2 years after getting out of college. Alan Greenspan. And I said, well, are you creative now? And he said, absolutely. And I said, please describe. He taps his temple, and he says, I have a little black box, pointing to his head. And whenever I have a problem or a decision to make, I put everything I know about it into that little black box. And then I go for a swim. When I open the box, there's the answer. So the gentleman who just emailed, same process. He goes to sleep. He's ready the moment the answer comes to him, and boom, he jots it down, and he's got the solution to whatever the problem was he was looking for. Mozart said he would get all his best ideas when he was walking out for a walk. Mm-hmm. One of the TV producers I worked with said whenever he got to a knot in a story, he would go for a drive, and the knot would unravel.
All kinds of great ideas in the book. The book is called itself, Every Idea is a Good Idea. Tom Sturgis is the creator and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Tom, thanks for joining us today.
What a blast visiting with you. Thank you so much, and I love seeing your creativity in action.
Thanks for helping inspire it. Take care.